Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy.
And I'm your host, Bits.
And today we have a repeat guest on the pod. For listeners who have been with us since the beginning, you know who you are. You might remember that our very first season that we recapped was season 6 in Las Vegas. And our guest today was the very first guest ever to appear.
Was
on
I really?
Compliments to the Chef. Yes, you were.
Oh my God, that's right.
You have no idea how important you are to us and our history and how we got started. And we have nothing but incredible things to say about you. But listeners, if you're new to the pod, you are in for a treat because today we have the one, the only food writer, recipe developer, Kendra Vaculin. Welcome back to the pod.
Thank you so much for having me. Wow, I didn't know I was first. That feels huge.
You were
full
a big break.
Circle.
Wow. Wow. Feels awesome.
Well, you'll be our back. Like litmus test on like, have we gotten any better at this? Likely not. But I'm super excited. And I'm super excited for the movie you picked today too.
Oh my God. Me too. I've been wanting to talk about this movie for a long time.
Okay. Well, good. Because we have a lot of questions for you.
Great. Good.
And for the crowd about, you know, what this movie is. But before we get to our movie, which listeners, for if you're wondering, the movie we are talking about today is The Taste of Things. It's fabulous. We're going to get to it. But before we do that, we want to just catch up with Kendra a little bit. Kendra, last time we spoke, you were a food editor at Bon Appetit magazine.
Yes.
What are you up to nowadays? Tell us about what's going on.
Yeah, I have abandoned my post at BA after 5.5 lovely years because I'm writing my debut cookbook, which comes out in spring 2027. Super exciting. So, you know, in a gabillion years, look out for that. And I'm also doing events. I have a dinner party pop-up series called Dining Room that I run in New York that I've been doing since 2023. And that is coming back in full swing. So I'm really keeping myself busy, pitching recipes to other outlets. You know, after you only get to develop recipes for one outlet for 5.5 years, it's really fun to try to convince other places to let you develop recipes for them too. So I'm trying to spread my wings and do a lot of different things at the same time. It's really nice to be able to focus so much on my book too.
We're so excited. Can you give us a sneak peek of the focus of the book at all?
Yes, it's called Dinner Plans, and it is like 2/3 weeknight dinner vibes and 1/3 dinner party. Oh. At BA, I wrote a monthly column called Speedy Does It, which was a quick weeknight dinner type recipes, and I also oversaw the Dinner is Served section of the print magazine, which was all sort of that same ethos. And I also am an avid host and do these dinner party pop-ups, so those are kind of like my two modes of being, the Wednesday night, sort of like 45 minutes or less dinner, and also like the Saturday night, you can take all day type of vibe. So I wanted to split it with the bulk of it going towards weeknights because that is the bulk of our time.
Ugh, I love that. Can I ask, is there a veggie ingredient that you're particularly interested to feature or celebrate? Or have you found yourself like gravitating to any special ingredients?
That's such a fun question. I would say the ingredient I have to keep myself from adding all of the time is fennel. I love fennel so much. It's my favorite vegetable by a landslide. And I kept wanting to write more recipes with fennel, so much so that I have it's quote unquote one recipe in the book, but it's called like a fennel salad for every mood. And there's like 6 variations of fennel salad within it because God, I just, to me, it's like the best thing to eat.
I love it. I find that whenever I'm eating a dish and that there's like, I'm like, what is that flavor? It's always fennel.
Yeah, it does a lot. It's really powerful. And I just love, especially this time of year, I really love cold, crunchy. And so fennel, like shaved really thin and dressed, and then you put it in the fridge for a little bit and then you eat it. It's like, to me, that's it. Mm. That's so good.
Oh, Bits, I think I know what we're doing for dinner tonight.
Oh, well, I mean, we could probably use your cookbook because Nancy and I went to the grocery store before this. We're hanging out this weekend, doing a little girls weekend, and we were like, let's do something crazy. And we picked up some
Artichokes.
What did we pick up? Artichokes.
Nice.
Like, we never made these. So we're going to like make artichokes together for the first time. It's going to be beautiful. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
That's friendship.
It really
is. That's friendship.
So okay, artichoke.
Enough about us. And we were also kind of shamed by someone being like, artichokes aren't hard to cook. And we're like, okay, well, it's an adventure. Okay, so let us have it.
They are freaky looking. Are you kidding? I think they dissuade, you know, amateurs all the time.
Yes. There we go. We already picked them up and purchased them. That's half the battle. So shut it.
Okay, well, we're so excited by everything you do, and in 2027 we'll have you back on the pod. And,
hell yeah,
you know, while you're doing your giant press tour, we'll be famous podcasters by then. You'll be a New York Times best-selling cookbook author. And we will
I doubt it, but you will definitely be famous podcasters.
We do a pretty good job of manifesting things on this pod.
Okay,
yeah, so we're gonna manifest for you.
Great.
The vibes are in your favor, I think.
But okay, let's get to the meat and potatoes, pun intended, of this movie. So listeners, if you're looking for the summer blockbuster series, your content starts now. On this week's episode, as I said, we are talking about The Taste of Things. Now, Taste of Things is, I do not speak French, so I'm not even going to try. But I believe that it is a movie based on the 1924 novel La Vie et la Passion de Dodin Buffon, Gourmet. So this is a French movie with subtitles. Everybody be very proud that you watched a movie with subtitles. You did reading this weekend. And it is, you know, broadly a movie about a French chef and his cook who lives in his home, and their joint love of cooking as an expression of art and their relationship to food and to each other. Mm-hmm. So it's set in 1889, and it is in the most beautiful French kitchen you've ever seen in your life. We're going to get to that. But before we get to discussing the most gorgeous kitchen I've ever seen in my life, Kendra, let's start by you telling us why you picked this movie.
This movie is okay, so I love gentle culinary visuals, and this movie is like 2 hours and 15 minutes of gentle culinary visuals. It is like, do you want to be lulled into a comforting stupor of bubbling things on the stove, roasts being removed and then returned to the oven, like stalks being strained through a strain. Like, it's just beautiful, gorgeous culinary everything from start to finish. I really love, there's a television show on Netflix called The Mach and I. It's you guys should definitely watch it if you haven't. It's about a it's a fictional show, but it's about these two best friends who move to the historic district of Kyoto to become geishas, and one of them like has what it takes and one of them like definitely does not, and so she becomes like the house cook of this house full of geishas, and it's extremely gentle and so kind, and there is nary a plot or problem in the whole show. And and the girl who is the cook just makes like gentle comfort Japanese food for all the girls in the house, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. That is the show. And this is the French version of that. It's just,
oh my goodness,
a beautiful meal every couple of hours. She's making a delightful omelet for him in the morning. She's making a fun lunch. She's making a 17-course meal for dinner. Like, it's just this never-ending litany of gorgeous, very diligently prepared food. And for people with, you know, sharp eyes or culinary backgrounds, it's very fun to watch these techniques happen. These people are there's clearly a really good culinary consultant on this movie, because oftentimes you watch these modern movies where people are famous celebrities are playing chefs or whatever, and they have like just terrible knife work or whatever. That is not the case here. Like, these people look like they really know what they're doing, and it all looks so fantastic. And of course, as you mentioned, that kitchen is just a dream place.
You could not have described this movie more perfectly.
I agree. I don't know that I – maybe we should call it. I don't know if I have anything to add. I cannot agree more with just the gentleness of the film. Mm. It is so – it was just such a – It was the highbrow version of the feeling that watching Great British Bake Off gives me.
Totally. Yes.
Mm-hmm. The stakes are low, even mm-hmm. though the central plot is obviously very sad. It just still felt extremely low stakes, extremely slow. The fact that you could just watch. I mean, we watched her make an entire meal.
Oh, yeah.
It was maybe we didn't wait for the thing to come out of the oven, but I'm pretty sure you could make that meal based on just watching this movie if you paused enough times.
Totally. It was a long form TikTok of her making the meal. Like, we saw every step.
Yeah.
Yes. They did not skip around.
Okay, let's talk about this opening scene. The opening mm-hmm. scene, I clocked it, I believe is 36 minutes long.
Before we like even hear a single word.
Before you even hear a single word or any wow. form of tension. It's, I actually wrote.
Nancy,
I
think you could never.
I could never. Drag me. No, I hate silence. In fact, I was watching this and I was just like talking to myself aloud. I was like, what's happening here?
What's she doing?
What are you doing? But at 22 minutes is when we get the first sort of plot development mm-hmm. of her like, or sorry, we should name some characters. So we have.
Good idea.
Yes. So mention major players directed by Tran Anh Hung, who's a Vietnamese. And then Juliette Binoche is Eugenie, and Benoit Magimel is Chef Dodin. So these are our major players. Mm. And then we have, what is the name of his helper?
Violette.
Thank you, Violette. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. And then Pauline is a young girl who comes for the day, essentially to stage at this mansion.
Exactly.
Okay, so now we've laid the scene. Chef Dodin and Eugenie are we will get to their romantic relationship, but he is the chef and she is the cook in the house.
He is like a noted celebrity gourmand mm-hmm. in France. And she is the chef that he has hired to cook at his chateau.
Correct.
Wow.
And so this first scene, we're waking up in the morning, we're walking downstairs and watching them prepare what I believe is an 8-course meal.
Oh, yeah.
It was so inviting.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's entrancing.
It was beautiful to just – I felt I could not take my eyes away from the screen despite there really being no plot development for quite some time. And why, Bits, what do you think, with in addition to the fact that, you know, they're just like making beautiful food, what do you think was so enthralling about this opening scene, which is so unlike the way we have come to expect movies to begin these days?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, first of all, the fact that you can just run a movie for 36 minutes and not say a single word and say quite a bit otherwise was just beautiful. You know, you're still, there's like a knee-jerk reaction to kind of like wait for the thing to like move, and the fact that it continued to kind of like buck that expectation. And then finally you just realize like, wow, I'm just sitting in this and I love it. I think, you know, as the whole point of the series has been watching movies that are really centered around food and like the depiction of food and cuisine in film. And I think the way that this kind of compares to something like which we watched previously, Chef, for instance, like the food, I would say that it is exalted in a similar capacity. It's like maybe perhaps not the food so much as like the experience of being in the culinary arts, as perhaps this movie was really just a celebration of the plate and of the ingredients. But the way that, you know, in Chef, you have this really zippy, like, you know, time and turnaround. Everything's like sloppy and messy and like the sandwich is falling apart and things are flying off the, and the fact that though both of these movies play with the pacing of service and the way that like food is created and prepared and enjoyed really tracks with just, it was just beautiful to see that food was sort of the through line there that just drove the pace of this movie. It was like, this is what this food requires. Like French food, it takes time, it takes diligence. It's pulling stuff in and out of the oven and basting it and then like straining that and then making something of the strain. And it just is so involved. And I think it just did a wonderful job of playing with the time that it takes to do a particular food or cuisine well, and making that really central to the movement of the story.
Could not agree with you more. I think it was like such a beautiful celebration of French cuisine and what makes it different. I think something that, I mean, and we watched Julie and Julia earlier this series, and the whole joke is like butter is French cuisine. It's all butter. But with this movie really opened the aperture of French cuisine, I think, a little bit. It's way more about like using the whole ingredient mm-hmm. and appreciating the ingredient. And there were so many moments that made me think of that. The primary one was when you have that oddly shaped copper pan, and I'm like, mm-hmm. what is going in there?
Oh my God.
And then
yeah.
it is perfectly shaped for a giant monkfish. Like that yeah. blew my mind. And so with that, I want to get to the thing that I think is all bursting at the top of our lips, which is this French Nancy Meyers kitchen.
Oh my God.
Kendra, let's start. Why is this the kitchen of our dreams? And what is so spectacular about it?
When I first watched this movie, I watched it with my husband, and those 36 minutes of silence, I literally said, who are they cooking for?
Yes.
Like six
yes.
times.
Why?
Because I was same like, thing. I was like, this meal is like way too big to be like just lunch. Like, who is this for? And Michael was like, could you wait and see? Because he'd already seen it. but also I was like, that stove. Like I couldn't stop saying that stove. It's just so fantastic. It's like it has all these mini burners, but it's that olden days thing where the burner is covered, so the yes. like the stove itself is cast iron and it's heated from below, so it's just like super hot cast iron flat, which is also like so much easier to clean than our stupid fucking cast iron right. grate stove. And like it's just so expansive, the amount of space to do activities. Like you have so much room to spread out and handle 7 fish and 11 chickens. Like
right.
there's so like my kitchen could never. It's just, I think it's both space. It's clearly built for function. Like the way that it's arranged is like a chef did that. Like somebody who cooks arranged this kitchen. I couldn't stop thinking of, there were just these little things where I was like, dang, you know, Violette stirs something and then puts the spoon right back in the bane. Like she had removed the spoon from the bane, stir something, and then puts it back in the bane. And I was like, wow, like we would go wash that. Like, yeah. And she's not washing it. She is returning it to the bane because like they'll wash it all later. Like, you know, yeah. like, and it's all part of the same meal and who cares? Like, mm-hmm. and so she's going to use that spoon for something else later and it doesn't matter. Also, like the recipe developer and me couldn't handle, like they would put all this stuff in to make a, you know, they roast this like rack of lamb mm-hmm. and then they pull it out and they put all these vegetables underneath the lamb. And then they put the lamb back on top and put yes. it back in the oven and then they take it out and then they scrape all the vegetables to the side and strain it. And then I'm like, do something with the vegetables.
I know.
They don't. It doesn't don't. Matter to them.
Yeah,
it's all yes. in service of a sauce that's made from the drippings strained through the vegetables.
Oh my and God, like, the sauce game.
These the are people sauces. Who are not concerned about money and they're not concerned about time. Like they have God. A maximum of both things. And that I think feeds in that and the kitchen, which is obviously a result of having tons of money and tons of time, being able to build out a kitchen like this
yes.
is what makes it a culinary dream, because everybody who loves to cook would do it all the time if they had the time and the money. And yeah. that those are the the limiting factors. These people don't have those limits.
I could, you know, you bring up a really interesting point that I hadn't thought of, which is like this movie, despite having like very little plot, and I don't mean that disparagingly.
No.
It felt so indulgent. Like afterward, I felt as though I had eaten one of those meals. I was like,
totally.
Whoa. I was completely bowled over. And I think in its very quiet plot development, it allows the time that you mentioned to like just really get into the process and you feel as though you've gone on a very maximal journey despite totally. The minimal plot development.
I do think when you're saying like that there's no – they don't have the normal like bam, 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 move forward mm-hmm. plot devices. you have to allow yourself to like allow those quiet moments to actually be plot building.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's a moment very at the beginning when Dodin goes downstairs to the cellar and he's looking at getting wine or something from the cellar, and he opens their freezer, right, and there's all the ice chips, and there's, right, an ice cream maker in the freezer. And so you think to yourself, okay, Chekhov's ice cream maker, later we're going to get ice cream. Like, and so now you're like waiting and waiting and waiting until, yeah, the ice cream happens.
Oh my God.
And you're allowing that to build a little bit of tension in your body. And then dessert comes around and you're like, now we get Baked Alaska.
Oh my God. Everybody needs a sweet treat.
Yeah.
Yes. The sweet treat, the like promise of a sweet treat on the horizon was the tension. Oh my God.
Okay, let's talk about the sound design, actually, because that's in my research of this movie, that's something that's widely commented on, which is there is almost no music in this movie. And what we do hear a lot of is Dodin's breathing, which bits, yeah, I want to ask you about, because you texted me about it as you were watching the movie.
Yeah, I did say he breathes really heavily. And I feel like it was especially because she is like quiet as a mouse. You don't hear anything from her. She just is super still. She's not talking. She's gesturing to the girls to like, you know, help here and there. But and then by comparison, then he gets on. And I don't know that they're saying anything by that. Like, she's so quiet and he's just like breathing really heavy. But yeah, he breathes really heavy. I mean, I just think it added to the overall stillness. I didn't even... Honestly, until you said that, I didn't even notice this film didn't really have music. But yeah,
me neither.
I didn't either until it's the crazy internet told me. And I was like, wow. Oh, yeah, I did just watch 2 hours and 16 minutes of kind of no music. But okay, we've really indulged ourselves in the cooking and that opening scene. And we haven't even gotten past that opening scene. So I want to get into the actual plot of the movie. Well, first, maybe let's start with... Who they're cooking for, which is like Dodin's bros, essentially, who are also gourmands. And the whole time I was just like, to be just like a wealthy French man going to his homie's house for a big
meal. Just like
meal,
rolling deep with his like four best friends.
And
all
he's like,
day,
I don't go anywhere
night
without them, Prince of Eurasia. They will accompany me to your
this
dinner.
Is my
this
sweet.
This is my entourage. Yeah, this is my
this
sweet.
This is my sweet.
Wait.
So good.
Can I, maybe this is a, what, who is, okay, I'll admit, like I Googled like, was there a Prince of Eurasia? And there wasn't, but I also like, what is he a stand-in for? Like this guy is just like glomming on and like wants to be in favor with this really notable French chef. And, you know, I guess that's the takeaway, but was Dodin kind of like a dick about it? Like, I feel like he kind of was like rude. I don't know, but maybe he's at that level. He was really nice to her, and then he was kind of really rude in that scenario. And I just walked away thinking, what should I take away from his character based on this interaction?
Kendra, do you want to?
Oh, sure.
I'm happy to as well. I just feel like I talk
sure
a lot.
I don't even know if there's a real question. I want to know what your vibe is on this guy.
Yeah, well, I think when the Prince of Eurasia is like, you know, footman comes to the house and is like, yo, I'm here with an invite for you, and Dodin's like homies are like, he's never gonna say yes to this. And that to me is indicative of like, it's not a show to him. It's not supposed to be flippant. Like, the culinary arts are like sacred and they are, yes, important, and they are not, and I think he knew. He probably guessed that this guy who had hired clearly a French chef to be his chef,
yep,
despite being him not being French, wanted to show off a little bit to this.
Great,
he wanted to bring the gourmand into his house and say, I can do it as good as you. You know, like I have it just as good as you. And that kind of like maybe disrespect towards the idea of French cuisine, which, you know, modern take on it, like aside, you know, what we think of as like the superiority of one cuisine over another,
right,
which is not real. But at the time, you know, he was of the understanding that like nothing could beat, you know, French cooking and traditional,
right,
cooking. Like, he didn't want it to be, it's not a mockery. Clearly the guy really loved it, but it was like done to obscene levels. Ultimately, you know, we see that it is done to obscene levels. And so I think he was just like, they were like, he's never going to go because he wants shit to be simple. Like he wants shit to be like paid, simple, respect. Yep. But then he ultimately does go, I don't know why.
Yeah, well, it made it seem like that he made a promise to someone to go. Maybe I'm like, I don't.
Yeah,
I'm reading into like,
the plot
elements and it's they're not the important parts of this.
It doesn't matter. Yeah.
No, right. But Bits, I actually think that, and Kendra, you're sort of hitting this on the head too, but you have to remember contextually what's going on in the world right now, which is like, it's 1889. So it's like the Impressionist era in France. It's the Industrial Revolution in the United States. And there is all of this wealth outside of Europe for the first time. And a lot of countries, the US in particular, are going to France and the rest of Europe and essentially just buying up culture. That's how we got all of our great museums in the United States. That's how we got the Met. It's how we got the Frick. It's how we got all of these museums.
And I mean, think of the Gilded Age. There is a huge plot point on the Gilded Age that these American new money people don't have actual French chefs in their homes, that you are of the actual elite if the chef in your home is French, as opposed to, you know, American born.
Okay, very
good
point.
I think that this was probably, we are seeing the receiving end of this international attention that places like France received at this time in history, which is like, you can't just come in here and buy it up and consider yourself cultured. You have to have grown up with this. This estate has been in my family for generations. This kitchen isn't perfect because, you know, I went and I built it. It's perfect because it's grown over time to fit the exact needs of the food that I cook.
Right.
Totally. And it's a little bit of a shade of when he says, like, you can learn to cook at any age. You can be virtuosic at music from 7 years old, but you can't be a gourmand until you're 40.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, earn your stripes, kid. Like, Prince of Eurasia. You can't just buy a French chef and think you're hot shit.
Okay. Okay. Yes. I love that. And I love that. I just love the take of like, he takes it seriously. This guy is a joke. And
by the way, he made a joke of it also. The funniest, I laughed out loud. Again, I'm like looking back and I'm like, I really had a lot of emotions watching this movie. And we'll get to the romance, I promise, because there was a lot there too. But I laughed out loud when the homies are asking Eugenie, like, what did he say when he came home from the meal? Did he eat anything? Because you're listening to this French chef read off the longest menu you've ever heard. And you're just like, oh, that is disgusting how much food they're about to eat. And then Eugenie said, he didn't eat much. He just ate a soup, an omelet, a rack of lamb, and she lists another incredibly long list of food that she made for him, which goes to show that you know, it's an insult to the guy's cooking, that he was still hungry when he got
home. Well, I know we said we were past the first dinner, but I do need to note that every single one of those guys, like his crew at that table, had five entrees for dinner.
Oh, yeah.
They had five full plates of food. It was unbelievable.
The serving sizes were incredible, which leads you to believe that this Eurasian dinner with 72 entrees.
Like, what is that dinner about?
A literal nightmare.
God.
And then when he told Eugenie, like, I can't go to sleep with my last memory before sleep being this meal. So he needs like a full another meal to wash the memory of that one away.
God,
it's so rude.
Insane.
It's so rude.
I love that though. Oh my God.
So obnoxious. It's just like also so French to be like, I must eat something else. You know, it's just like, come on, my guy. God.
I love that.
He probably vomitoriumed, which is Bits's favorite thing in history is the vomitorium.
The vomitorium. I mean, there's no way you eat that much and you can't. Like,
I would
be
dead. Yeah.
There's
no way. You know what's interesting is so we had someone on the pod for Ratatouille, Jay Lee, who's an awesome food critic. And in an interview he gave recently, he was talking about sort of like an Instagram style of cooking or like a TikTok style of cooking where it's all like it's a bit perverse the way we like slap food on the counter and pull the bread apart and like the sound, the ASMR of it, like all of it. It's very perverse the way that we have come to depict food cooking on the internet. I want to know your thoughts on that, but this was the opposite end of the spectrum, but in a way like equally perverse. When they were eating that meal and just the amount of food, it just felt gross and like it was yucky almost.
Yeah, the amount of sauce ladled over.
Oh my God, the cream.
Like they so much ladling of sauces all the time. It felt like there was a moment later in the movie where he mentioned something being raw on purpose. And he's like, you know, something, the cucumber is left raw on purpose. And you're like, yeah. And it's so like shocking to him that that would be the case. And you're like, you know, we're hundreds of years later. So we have, you know, hindsight is 2020, I guess. But you're like, yeah, dude, like a fucking salad is good sometimes. Yeah. Like you need to have something raw and crunchy. You can't just have giant meat, giant creamy sauce over and over.
Like literal Panera bread bowl with like
I was the only time we saw a green salad was the Voulet Vent with like a garnish of salad.
Yes, immediately removed, by the way.
Yeah,
cut into wedges. Yeah. So funny.
That was wild.
It's so unendingly rich. And you know all the labor that went into it because you watched it for minutes on end.
Right.
But you're like, I actually need like a 1/8 portion of each thing in order to like I get it. Like after one bite I think I get it.
I get it.
And the idea that they each got their own is insane.
I think the most insane dish that he made, maybe it's not even a like notable one to either of you, but when he did the crawfish and the carrots and the just cream and that was it. And I was like, I don't even know where to start with this. Like each of those things on their own, delicious. I mean, maybe I wouldn't just like have cream sauce, but that to me was like a wild moment. And I'm thinking like, okay, cool. Like that's the side. And then I don't know, that probably went into something else. Like, did that go on I don't know. Everything like it was all of these like blocks got made and then they just like kept morphing into this like mega sauce dish that ultimately totally. Like, or sauce. Yeah. Or it's just like a consomme. And it's like, oh, remember like the 80 tons of stuff that I was just cooking? Now it's just like this broth here.
Clear broth. Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God.
Well, I actually was listening to an episode or an interview with Gail recently. The lovely Gail Simmons, for those Top Chef fans listening to our summer blockbuster series. And she was saying that apparently Tom Colicchio for years has been begging the producers to have like the start of the season be the chefs get to come and make all of their stocks for the season. Like they come and they make their soup and their consomme and everything so that they don't have to use like store-bought things.
Yeah.
But the issue is that they can't do overnight cooks on the show for like legal liability reasons. And Gail was like, do you know how boring it is to watch that? Like, that is not television.
Wow, that's really actually a fun fact I was not aware of.
But okay, let's talk about we've talked a lot about the expression of food and cooking as art. But let's switch to food and cooking as an expression of love in this movie. A very central plot point is that Chef Dodin and Eugenie are in this incredibly intimate and deep romantic relationship with each other that is at times physical, but at times not. And he is constantly seeking her hand in marriage, and she constantly says no. You know, she doesn't really ever totally explicitly say why, but she alludes to it. And so, you know, Bits, how would you describe their love story? And do you think it's romantic? Do you think it's tragic? Do you think,
I mean,
what place does it play in a love
story?
It
felt very realistic. Like it just felt like the sort of advice that every relationship is different. And I just felt that there was a lot of honesty to their portrayal and their intimacy. And I think, you know, on the rebuffing of his advances for marriage, I think maybe this is maybe an oversimplification, but I have to imagine that part of that was just her first love is food. And she loves him through the food she cooks. And I would imagine that she's thinking, okay, if I'm your wife, I can't be your cook. And this is how I want to love you. And, you know, once we see towards the end when she finally does accept, it's because there's not much time left. So it just felt very honest. I think I just love it. I think they had good chemistry. I think it was really beautiful. Even just their whole real like familial unit between the girls that worked there, the friends. It was sort of this like very formed family that was brought together through food. And I think that was just beautiful.
Yeah, it was really lovely. I do love like their chosen family, like wider community seemed really beautiful. But I agree. I think it's like once she becomes his wife, like the idea in her head is that once I become his wife, I'm something different now. Yeah. And the wife of someone established in the way that he is doesn't get to be in the kitchen. Like that's no longer a proper thing mm-hmm. for the wife of, you know, a celebrated and rich guy to be doing. And God forbid she give up the thing that she loves most. Yeah. She doesn't really want to sit at that table with those boring guys. Like when they're like, why don't you come up and eat with us? Mm-hmm. She's like, I speak to you through my food. I have nothing else to say. Like, that's true. Like she would rather be downstairs with the girls, like straining another soup
right.
than up there talking to them. And not being his wife means she gets to keep cooking and also leave her door unlocked for him some nights if that's what she wants.
Ayo. Yeah. Loved that.
Their relationship was like just very beautiful because I think it's just like two people who share such a deep passion for something that isn't the other person. And like there's so much love for – there's like this third thing that makes their relationship real. And it is so beautiful. Kendra, you are a professional cook who is married.
Mm-hmm.
That proposal was pretty remarkable and romantic. What is the most romantic thing you've ever cooked or have had prepared for you? I saw a recipe of like Mapo mac and cheese that I feel like was a testament to your relationship.
That's true. I developed a recipe for a BA called Mapo Chili Mac, which is a was a joke in our home for a really long time. Michael, my husband, is half Chinese and he grew up in the Midwest. And in many ways, Mapo Chili Mac is the embodiment of him. And he loves to like make up fake dishes that are like mega fusion, you know, like insane fusion dishes. And we used Mapo Chili Mac, that name, as sort of like a shorthand for like what crazy thing will they think of next? Mapo Chili Mac. And then one day I said it at work. And my coworker was like, that sounds really fucking good. And I was like, oh, huh. We've been joking all this time, but it turns out it actually is real. And so then I, of course, had to actually make Michael some Mapo Chili Mac. And there was a lot of pressure because, you know, a decade of our relationship had ridden on this joke becoming real. So I think that was one of the best things I've ever made for him, certainly. Michael is a really good cook. He would never say that about himself, but especially I just think being around me has made him better, not to brag, but also he came into our relationship with like a really good a desire to be cooking. He's also like a fastidious guy and that is helpful for cooking. But he used to make like whenever he would like make me dinner, which like in like a fancy or romantic way, it would be carbonara. And so now to me, I never make carbonara because it feels like a very special thing that he makes for me.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love carbonara and I'm glad that that's the dish. It's so good.
It's so good. And it's so luscious. It's like so luscious. And so to me, I'm like, oh, he labored over this. He ensured the eggs didn't scramble. Like
there's a little technique, like there's timing. That's beautiful. But there's simplicity. Nice. And that is the taste of things. And that is this film.
That is the taste of things. One of the scenes that I was like, gasping because I thought it was so beautiful was the scene right after they announced their engagement to all their friends, which looked like an impressionist painting. It looked like a
Monet. Oh my God,
it was a gorgeous scene, but they're walking through this field and they're saying, you know, like we're in the autumn of our lives. And she says, I'm still in the summer of my life. You know, but the undercurrent there and subtext there being that we are led on to the fact that she clearly has some sort of illness that is precipitously taking more and more of her life from her. And eventually, very sadly, before they are able to wed, Eugenie passes away in her sleep. And it's this incredibly devastating series of scenes where, you know, we learn that she's dead and then they have this funeral. Did you notice that the funeral happened in the kitchen?
Oh, I hadn't even.
I didn't even notice that either.
It took me a second to realize, but they clearly they marched her coffin through the kitchen. Which was like, oh my God, it was so gut-wrenching. But that, I mean, that was my response to it. But I mean, like Kendra or Bits, whoever wants to answer, how did that final sequence of her dying and then how he copes with her death, how did those scenes land with you? And how did you feel as though food played a role in that grief journey?
I mean, he didn't eat for a while. And I think that sums it up. He was like, if I can't have Eugenie, I can't have anything type of vibe. And when his friends tried to get a new cook for his house, it immediately went awry. They thought, we'll just sneak somebody in and she'll make his normal omelet. And he fucking lost it because, like, God forbid somebody else take her place, right? And so I understand, especially when it's so intrinsic. Like, you're not going to not eat, you know. Yeah. You have to eat food. But if what you're going to eat 3 times a day has for 20 years or more been prepared by the same woman who you also are in love with, suddenly, you know, you can't just seamless your dinner in her absence. Like, somebody has to make you dinner, and like, it's not going to be her. And that is like a huge blow.
Shout out to Seamless. Haven't thought of that company in a long time. Purchased by DoorDash.
Purchased by DoorDash. I feel like they all still have apps though. Like,
Well, Seamless only exists in New York City, but it is.
Okay. Yeah. Not related to this conversation, but when I order takeout, it is a random food delivery service every time. I'm like, okay, Grubhub, okay, Seamless, okay. Like, I have no allegiance. I'm rogue and I'm looking, I guess, is my shout out. I completely agree with Kendra's take. It's heartbreaking. Even being in the space is heartbreaking. This idea that this thing that is so core to, like, and vital to living life is now gone and holds momentarily held no interest for him. And so we haven't talked a whole lot about Pauline, who ends up kind of being his, like, savior at the end of this. And, you know, was sort of there. She was there all along. But there is a moment where this could easily be, cooking food just doesn't do it for me anymore, because there's a part of it that is now gone. It's irretrievable. And I think that it's really, I just thought it was lovely that the through line with, you know, Eugenie was very invested in Pauline's skill and was going to be there to basically be the one to take her under her wing, and goes to her parents' house and gets their permission and all of this stuff. And then we have this, you know, I think this grief really peaks when he shouts at Pauline and, you know, kind of like pushes her out of the kitchen in his, like, fit of rage because she put the apron on, which was also just like, oh no, like, I don't do that. Like, that to me, I was like, okay.
Yeah,
I mean, I get why you did
this one.
I know it felt obvious, but I'm like, okay, yes, it moved things along. So I'll allow it. But just shouting at her. And then of course they come back and they're like, he's like, I can't help. And it's like, really? But you're a chef. Like, I actually think you're going to be pretty good at helping her. But it's interesting. I don't really like sad movies. I don't like watching things and being sad. Like, I'm not like, I'm just in the mood for a good cry. And so I do really like that. Even when it happened, I could appreciate the beauty and the sadness from like a 1,000-foot distance, because for me, the love in the heart of this movie was really the food. And, you know, but
yeah,
I fully digress.
I really liked that Pauline, who they clearly had thought was like a savant, she was like so good and adept at cooking. And they even said when they were talking about her earlier, like, and I wrote this line down, he said, Eugenie said that she thinks that one day Pauline will invent a new dish. And Dodon said, like, discovering a new dish adds more joy to society than the discovery of a new star. And like as a recipe developer, I was like, fuck yeah. that is true, isn't it? But also that at the time, like they hadn't discovered like lasagna things. Yet. Like, yeah. You know, they probably had. But you know what I mean? Like there were like oh my things God, good point. That yeah. like they didn't have that feel like so interesting. Like that
baked
guy
Alaska
never
was
had
brand new.
Right, exactly. It was so new. So like think of all the things. He's never had a smash burger in his life. That's to come.
Oh my God.
So like
could
you
be
know,
you, Pauline.
So many things to come. But it was nice that they were like, okay, this girl, she holds a lot of promise. So much so that when he finally does come around to the idea of bringing on a new chef, it is done in tandem with Pauline. Like she is yeah. a part of the interview panel. And like, it is so cute to see this like old guy and this tiny girl being like, we are equals figuring yeah. this out together.
How do you think Ugh. That makes Violette feel? By the way.
Okay, so I brought this up with my husband last night because when we watched it again, I was like, I feel like this sucks for Violette. And he was like, here's the deal. Violette is like the maid. And yeah. she, because they are cooks, they, what they often needed help doing was like, pass me this bowl or whatever. But she's mostly like there to like clean the house and
right.
whatever.
She like
she's
runs
not
the
like a
up.
Culinary
yeah.
person, you know?
Okay.
And so she, I think, and she also brought Pauline there to them as yes. her niece. And I think she was like, you'll like this girl because she's actually good at cooking. I'm just that. Like, you know, a person, you know.
Okay. Okay. She got the full endorsement then.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. Violette couldn't boil water. another side tangent that Nancy and I talked about on the way up here today. We're in the Berkshires for the weekend. But we were talking about wells and well water. And
oh, yeah.
I was blown away with just watching, you know. As everything else in this movie, you just see the whole process of it. The process of just like putting the bucket in, pulling water up out of a well. And I'm just like, that is wild that that is how it works. Like I know it on some level, but just watching somebody pull water out of a well was, I'm sorry. I'm just like blown away by the well piece and it's not even worth discussing. I just
no,
needed to raise it here.
Totally. And then she uses the well water to wash these heads of lettuce that she had cut
oh my God,
from
yes.
the garden. And
yes.
I couldn't stop thinking in my brain, like, that's it now. Those heads of lettuce are gone. And, like, they need to wait, like, however long until they grow back for there to be
yeah.
more lettuce. And they're not making a salad because, God forbid, they make a salad. They're braising those heads of lettuce into, like, these
little
shrivel bits that go alongside the meat. And each man gets his own head of lettuce. So it's like there's a whole head – like, they decimated their entire lettuce crop in one dinner. Like,
one dinner.
It
dude,
was
Oh, my
crazy.
God. So true. So
what
true.
Do you
and
make
the cow.
Of the- Yeah,
the guy
cow.
With the cow. And they're like, oh, yeah. And they're weighing. Were they having a conversation of which cow to pick in given the meal that was being made? Or
I think
am I?
So. Yeah. Okay. And they were how they I were all that. Like, if something comes up, I'll come with you to go get the cow. Like, they're all
yes.
like, we're all just going to go on this cow errand.
All they
together.
Do is hang out. And they're yeah. like, okay, now I'm going to bring a cow. Like, great dinner last night. Okay, let's go look at your cows. Cool. Like, we're going to have this dinner with this cow later. Like,
amazing.
It's just this beautiful
group of,
life.
Of boys is
this age
incredible
gob
to me. Yeah.
Yeah. They're so funny. I would love
so
to be
cool.
a part.
Like, one's a doctor, so when they all get their coronaries, like, you know, yeah. they're set. But wait, let's also talk about – there are two things I want to talk about. The first is the ortolans.
Sure, yeah.
Kendra, you're a food professional. Do you, mm-hmm. I Googled it, but I want to give you the opportunity to explain to our listener what
sure.
that scene was all about.
Yes. So ortolan is a type of small bird that are – force-fed, you hear them say it in the movie, but they are force-fed a grain. And in the movie, they say he force-fed them millet and so that they're like engorged. And then they are drowned in Armagnac. So it's like you could just kill the bird a normal way, but they don't do that because they're crazy. So like historically, what you would do is like tie the bird up to like a rig, like a lot of the birds up to like a rig, and then drop it down over like a vat of this liqueur such that they drown in the liqueur. And then they are poached in that liqueur and then they are
oh my
eaten
God.
Whole. So you like bones and beak and all, you eat the whole thing. And you saw them eat it underneath the the napkin, like with their head under the napkin, mm-hmm. making insane sounds that someone insane would be so funny.
Right, what's the napkin? Why the napkin?
The napkin is, it's for two reasons. People say like it's to concentrate the smell. So like the aroma stays with, you know, doesn't dissipate. You get like every last sniff or whatever of the experience because you're underneath this thing. People also say it's to hide from God because like you're doing such a depraved act by eating this animal whole that God shouldn't watch you do it. It's really horrifying. They did it on Succession, I think.
Yes, I remember the scene in Succession when they do it.
I don't remember that.
So there's like, yeah, it's like
it's Tom Wamsams and Cousin Greg.
Yes. Back then it was like a little more regular. Now I think it's like literally illegal. I don't know. I think it is illegal. It's like, it's bad. You shouldn't treat an animal this way. It's like literally so bad. But
okay, they actually eat the bone. Like, can you physically eat the bone? Like,
is it just like a fine? They're small. The birds are really, really small. They're like, I forget. It's like ortolan something. The second word is the type of bird that it is, but it's like
I'll look it up.
It's this tiny, tiny little bird. Okay. So you can just kind of crunch it. And it says, I know that
ortolan bunting.
Bunting. Yeah, it's a bunting. Wow. They say that people will spit out like the bigger bones.
Okay.
But you can just eat them. And people eat them head first.
Oh, okay. That's wild.
Okay, I am prepared to get canceled for this. The French do some depraved shit to birds.
Oh, yeah.
I agree.
Oh, yeah. There's some... I mean, this is not the craziest bird thing I've ever heard culinarily. Is I watched some show, travel show, and they showed like an Icelandic, I think it's Iceland, where the puffins would like leap off the side of the rocks to fly around, and to catch a puffin, they would just use like essentially a pool cleaner, like a long pole with a net on the end, and they would just like catch a puffin out of the air to eat the puffin, and to cook the puffin, they would like, you know, take out the insides like you do a chicken and then fill it with cake batter and then sew it up and then steam it. So when you cut into it, it's meat and cake.
No.
Can you believe it's like an Icelandic delicacy? I think about it all the time.
That's like a psycho turducken.
Oh, yeah. It's like stuffing, like stuffing a chicken with like bread and fruit and whatever like you put in stuffing, but it's cake.
Okay, I mean, yeah, when you put it like that, like it's adjacent.
Yeah.
However,
it's wrong.
Oh.
It's evil twin status. Yeah, it's not.
But it does, people do weird shit. You'll complicate the question, is it cake?
It's a good question.
Like, would it be in the dessert section of your cookbook?
Oh, definitely. It would not be in the cookbook. Oh, Lord. No. But people are doing weird. I mean, like, you think of the French developed gavage.
Foie gras.
Gavage. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like, force feeding the geese so that they make really good liver.
Right.
And like
okay.
that, you know, I guess back then they had not yet discovered that that was like actually a heinous thing to do to an animal.
Oh my God. I'm learning a lot. I'm learning a lot.
Yeah. Well, on that note of the French just really having no chill when it comes to stuffing birds, why don't we close this out a little bit. And think, Kendra, on a scale of 1 to 10 ortolans, how many would you give this movie?
10 out of 10 ortolans.
Head and
all. Or depending if that's bad, 0 out of 10 ortolans.
Yeah, okay, fair. Let's give it a different one. Let's say if you had to give this one from a scale of 0 to 10 real copper pots. How many would you give it?
I would say 9 out of 10 real copper pots. I think this movie is so delightful. I think it's long. I think its downside is that it's as a cinematic experience, it's long.
Agree.
It probably doesn't need to be this long. We spend a lot of time watching them cook. To me, delightful. To others, I'm sure less so. So I was happy with it, but I know I could even feel it in myself, me being like, okay. And that means that for others, it's a long movie. But I really love it so much. I think it feels like a balm. It washes over you. I'm also not a sad movie person, and I think it's just sad enough.
Yeah.
As soon as the first time she faints, you're like, that bitch gonna die. You're like, that 100% is going to happen, and I know it.
And he's gonna be sad, and he's gonna grieve,
and we're gonna keep going, and the food will continue to be delicious, and all will be well. And like going into it feeling that would be true. it all kind of plays out as you expect. And it's just a delightful experience from beginning to end. It doesn't make you hungry. So I would recommend if you watch it at home, like have a sandwich on standby or something so that you are ready to, you know, have your own luscious meal awaiting.
That is a great call. What would be – because I definitely watched this at the non-ideal time of day, which is to say last night at 9 o'clock. When should people watch this movie?
That's a great question. I think you should watch it at like 5 p.m. and at 7:45 or 8, you have a dinner reservation at a French restaurant.
Oh, there it is.
You're going to be ready to go.
Yeah. And
you're going to probably order something like ludicrously buttery and rich that you wouldn't otherwise, but that you're like so unbelievably in the mood for now that you watched.
Oh, I love that idea.
That's such a good call. Might I add something to that, which is I think you should watch this movie on a rainy day.
Oh, because sweet.
The sunshine in this movie is so spectacular, is beautiful. Yes. And because it's such a long movie, and if you're watching it at 5 p.m., you have to have a reason for staying inside for 2.5 hours. And
that's
true. I think rain is the reason.
Yeah, good call.
Love, love.
Oh, well, there you have it, dear listener. You know, you now know when to watch this. It's on Hulu. You can watch it there. I don't know how you gals watched it. And, you know, any closing remarks from our incredible guest?
My remark would be, I will quote the film. And it is, there's a point when they're talking about the Prince of Eurasia's like insane meal and the things that the chef had said in response to it. And one of his banger lines was, it was a parade with no organization. And I think that to me, for anyone who cooks at home, for anyone who ever throws a dinner party, you have to think about the organization of your meal. If it's just a list, if it's just an unending litany of dishes, we've all been to like a dinner party, you know, potluck where there's like lasagna next to sushi next to whatever, like, and it's so chaotic. If you have the capacity to create order in all of your dishes, there has to be some ebb and flow and continuity and conversation between the dishes, and everything has to sort of like coalesce in a big crescendo moment and then have a denouement. Like, it's kind of like a poem or a song in that way. A meal should feel like in the same, you know, course of it having the same kind of movement, and rather than just like bam bam bam. And that was the downside with this man thinking he could just do like big bold dish after big bold dish. So to treat your meals that way, give it a little bit of a song cadence, and have it have some organization rather than just be a parade.
Beautiful.
I love that. Well, if you were as touched by Kendra on this podcast as we are, follow her at Kendra on the internet. She creates incredible content. Cannot recommend it more highly. Look out for her book in a year and a half. Woohoo. And anything else I missed, Bits?
I don't think so. This has been one delicious – look, we only took about half the time of this whole movie. So there's still more to see. Definitely watch it. And thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.